Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 8 of ZU Cast. My name is Amanda Van Heil. I'm going to be one of your hosts for this episode. I am the host of Zelda News every week on our YouTube channel. I also stream on our Twitch channel. I do Running Blind every Sunday night where I play games I haven't played before. And also just recently came off of ZU-thon. We'll be talking about that a little later on in the episode. And want to go ahead and introduce our other host. Who do we have here this week?
Hello, my name's Cody. Dangerous Cody, Cody Davies. You may know me by many names, but basically what I do here is, well, for one, I'm a host on this podcast. I have a variety of things that I do around the site. I'm actually the Community Media and Marketing Director, apparently, is my official title, but webmaster is also another word that works. You may also know me from my Twitch show, The Cody Zone, which made a reappearance recently because we had a Zelda Universe marathon and I had a good 6-hour run of Oracle of Seasons in which I didn't make much progress at all. But yeah, that's me. I'm Cody. Welcome.
So here's what we have coming up in this episode. First up is going to be what Shona wants to see in the Breath of the Wild sequel, followed by what Brian doesn't want to see in the sequel. Then we've got community news, followed by Tingle's Jingles, Hyrule Away from Hyrule, Zelda and Super Smash Brothers, and then any feedback from you guys.
And of course, the most important segment, the credits, in which we credit other people.
As you should.
And we'll probably have some bloopers at the end too.
So let's pass it over to Shona for what she wants to see in the Breath of the Wild sequel.
There are a lot of things going on in the world of Nintendo that I've been really excited about lately. I've been having a lot of fun playing Cadence of Hyrule and Super Mario Maker, and I can't wait to get my hands on Link's Awakening in September. However, there's one thing I'm excited about above all else, and that is the sequel to Breath of the Wild that was recently announced at E3. I can't stop thinking about it, and all we've seen so far is an 86-second trailer. But that trailer contains things that have led me to ponder what this game could be about for literally hours. As part of this, I've been thinking about what I'd love to see in the sequel, and so I present 5 things I'd love to see in Breath of the Wild 2. Number 1 is a more detailed story. I will admit that I was a little disappointed when I realised that the majority of Breath of the Wild's story was being told via flashback. Now, I think it works really well for the type of game that Breath of the Wild is, especially as the journey itself allows players to create their own stories. But I'm the type of person who loves story, and so I found myself wanting to know more about the world and its lore. The ending of the game in particular had me dying to know what was going to happen next, and this is one of the reasons why I'm thrilled that there's going to be a direct sequel. In addition to the questions that relate to the events of Breath of the Wild, the sequel trailer has filled me with even more questions, particularly if the corpse is Ganondorf, which I strongly believe it is. While Zelda games have always been about gameplay first and story second, I'm confident that a more detailed story does not need to restrict the gameplay, and other open world games have already proved this. This leads me to number 2. I would love the sequel to have an interesting villain. Calamity Ganon was a force more than a character. I wanted to defeat him because the game told me to, but there was no emotional attachment. My desire for the sequel to have a more detailed story goes hand in hand with the addition of an interesting antagonist who has believable motives. Because the trailer has many hints that point to Ganondorf, I'm already really curious about his backstory, how he's tied to Calamity Ganon, and how his clearly long-dead corpse has come back to life. Therefore, if the villain ends up being a cardboard cutout big bad, I've already set myself up for disappointment. Some fans might ask, how many times can Ganondorf be revived in the Zelda franchise? And while I agree to some degree, I don't mind having him as a villain as long as he's got an interesting story. The best Zelda villain we've had so far was Ganondorf in The Wind Waker, and that's because we got to hear his side of the story for a change. So as long as he's an interesting and believable character, I'm all for it. The number 3 thing that I want in the Breath of the Wild sequel is something that I know a lot of players missed in the first game: dungeons. Breath of the Wild replaced the traditional Zelda dungeons with shrines and divine beasts. Across them all, there was a nice mixture of puzzle solving, combat, and difficulty, but thematically they were all very similar, and it began to get a little repetitive. Breath of the Wild nailed overworld exploration, and I'd love its sequel to introduce an underworld, which is just as fun to explore. Imagine vast dungeons and labyrinths, each with their own unique style, and full of puzzles, enemies, and secrets. The trailer does show what could be the entrance to a dungeon, and most of the action takes place in an area that is clearly underground. Also, judging by Link and Zelda's appearance, not a whole lot of time has gone by between the games, and if the gameplay takes place in the same world, Nintendo will have a challenge to make the gameplay and exploration new and interesting while keeping the world largely familiar. We know that they're up to this challenge because they've done it before in A Link Between Worlds, and there are other ways to bring a new experience to an older world, such as a dark world or travelling through time. But exploring dungeons would still be really, really great, even if they did any of those other things. The fourth thing that I would love to see is a playable Princess Zelda. Breath of the Wild undid a lot of Zelda's conventions, and I'd expect its sequel to continue in the same vein. If there's ever a time to have a playable Zelda, it's now. In previous games, we've had companions, and we've had Link team up with other characters, and Zelda herself has fulfilled both of these roles at different times. Zelda was one of the most detailed characters in Breath of the Wild. She had more agency and depth than we've seen in any other Zelda in the series. It would be fitting for her to continue to play a strong role, and for Nintendo to defy the trend of placing her in a position where she needs to be rescued. The trailer depicts Link and Zelda travelling together, so I'd love for them to encounter situations where there are things that Zelda can do that Link cannot. And the fifth and final thing I'd love to see is magic. This is another Zelda staple that did not feature as part of the gameplay in Breath of the Wild. There was definitely magic in the world, but Link didn't have a magic meter or the ability to cast spells the way he has in other games. In fact, Breath of the Wild blended magic with technology, and it did it rather well. But now that Calamity Ganon's influence has been removed from the ancient technology, and presumably Princess Zelda has reclaimed her Sheikah slate, it's time for Link to learn some new skills. Magic does appear to feature heavily in the trailer, with the strange hand and whatever force is reanimating the corpse. There's also a brief moment where it appears that Link himself is wielding the hand, or that it's taken control of him. If there are malevolent forces at play, magic may be the only solution. And as a gameplay mechanic, it would be another way to bring something new and fresh to the Breath of the Wild world. So there you have it. A few of the things that I'd love to see in the new game. Let us know what you would like, or wouldn't like, to see in the sequel. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Thank you, Shauna. So, Cody, what do you want to see in the Breath of the Wild sequel?
I think we should be getting more story, more character. I think it does make sense, the idea that, like Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, you've got one game that sets up the engine for everything, and then you get a second game which lets you not have to worry about the engine. Instead, you can just focus on creating interesting stories. So that's probably what I'm most interested in seeing.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward, or hoping for, rather, deeper character development. I am a huge Z-Link shipper, but aside from that, I do like just a strong story. So I would love to see plenty of Z-Link, but I also like to see more of the other characters and figure out why Link needs to go on this journey for reasons other than just he's brave. And then his relationship with the other characters is always important because it makes you want to do the side quests. And then also Prince Sidon because, well, he's beautiful. So now that we've heard what we want to see in Breath of the Wild, here's Brian with what he does not want to see.
Hey, listen, it's me, Brian Thomas, and today I'm talking to you guys about the teaser trailer that was shown during Nintendo's E3 Direct that showed off a sequel to Breath of the Wild. After watching the trailer over and over and over again, I've noticed that there are a ton of little great details that Nintendo is probably introducing to the sequel, and I'm really excited to see all of the new things that Nintendo has in store for us. but there are a few things that I've thought about that I'd rather them not go towards. And that's what I'm going to talk to you guys about today. The things I don't want to see in Breath of the Wild 2. Let's jump in. From watching the trailer, darker themes are pretty much a given at this point. However, I don't want a darker world visually. Give me that same bright and vibrant color palette from Breath of the Wild. Let me explore the vibrant greens of the sprawling fields or the warm yellow, oranges, and reds of the lava-filled mountainous regions of Hyrule. Nintendo incorporating darker themes in the teaser is a smart move in my opinion, but just offset those dark themes with the gorgeous color palette that we saw in the original. I don't want an entire game underground or in dark caverns that we've seen in the teaser. Let us explore the world that we've come to love with Breath of the Wild 2. Speaking of the world that we love, I don't want this game to take us to a new location either. At the end of the teaser, we see Hyrule Castle being lifted from the ground, and I do not want to return to Skyloft or any other floating islands in the sky. Rather than taking us to a new map, add to the existing one. One example I would personally love to see is the inclusion of the Minish, which were seemingly an idea when developing the original but never made it into the final game, or at least that's what it shows in early concept art. The original Breath of the Wild felt a bit empty to me, and I thought that Nintendo could have done more with the world that they created. I can't tell you how many times I climbed up a cliff to see what was up there, only to discover utter disappointment. There is a vast world to explore in Breath of the Wild, however, there wasn't much to discover. Add new and exciting things for us to discover now that the calamity is over and the people of Hyrule aren't afraid to travel. I would love to see what the world looks like now that it's safe from harm, and I would love to see what the people of Hyrule are going to do with enemy encampments or those giant skull hideouts that are just lying around Hyrule. However, now with Hyrule Castle being lifted from the ground, it looks like moving to a new location is a very real possibility, despite my hopes to stay grounded. Number 3 on my list of things I don't want to see in Breath of the Wild 2 is influence from other open world games. In a recent interview with IGN, Zelda's producer Aonuma stated that its younger developers are heavily influenced by Rockstar's latest title, Red Dead Redemption 2. Which was hugely successful both critically and commercially. However, as somebody who didn't enjoy the open world of Red Dead 2, I don't want to see the sequel to Breath of the Wild follow in its footsteps. I felt that Red Dead Redemption 2 suffered from the same emptiness that Breath of the Wild suffered from, this massive open world with very little to discover. I hardly felt that any exploration was rewarded in Red Dead 2, and I don't want to see Zelda stuck with another empty landscape. Random encounters with people throughout the world and bigger, more robust towns would be the only influences I would like to see from Red Dead Redemption 2 to be incorporated into Breath of the Wild 2. Number 4 on this list is for Nintendo to not return to dungeons. That's right, no dungeons. Please keep the shrines and divine beasts instead of reintroducing dungeons. The option to play through the entire game in any order was a breath of fresh air for the series, and Breath of the Wild 2 should continue that same playstyle. The Sheikah Slate allowed players to tackle obstacles in a multitude of different ways that made for great conversations with other players and friends on how to solve any given situation. The water cooler moments that this game created simply by allowing players to solve puzzles in different ways built such a unique community for the game that still continues today. Some of the best things I've seen from Breath of the Wild are the creative ways in which people solve shrines in an easier, alternative way and then share them on social media. I am still finding new and innovative ways to solve shrines thanks to the Sheikah Slate and its manipulation of the game's mechanics. If dungeons are to be reintroduced, their respective items are sure to return as well, and that would make for a much more linear experience than the Sheikah Slate. And finally, rounding out my list of things I do not wish to see in Breath of the Wild 2 is for Ganondorf to be the bad guy yet again. I know what you're saying, Ganondorf has always been the villain, but just hear me out on this one. the teaser shows what is seemingly a dried up old Ganondorf that has become victim to a glowing green hand. This hand is seemingly the greater threat to Hyrule and could be the cause of the Great Calamity, while Ganondorf ended up taking the fall for it and just being some sort of pawn. At the beginning of the teaser, we see that Zelda and Link stumble across a cave drawing of what looks to be like Ganondorf riding into battle. But a battle against what? I have to imagine that he is going to battle up against this new evil that we are about to discover in Breath of the Wild 2. And now towards the end of the teaser, we see Link being grabbed by a similar, if not the same, glowing green hand. Does this mean that Link becomes possessed and turns into an antagonist against his will? It's my hope that he does, because this would align with the hopefully darker tone of the game if we learn that he was possessed the whole time and that his powers were used to destroy the place that he called home. Instead of having Ganondorf be a villain, could you imagine a rehydrated Ganondorf teaming up with Zelda in order to save Link from this great evil? I think that introducing a new villain that ended up being the cause for 100 years of calamity and changing the way that we think about Ganondorf is a much more compelling story than having him be the bad guy for the umpteenth time. Well, there you have it, folks. My list of things I don't want to see Nintendo do with the sequel to Breath of the Wild. Please let me know what you thought of this list and any other list that you'd like to see me do in future episodes. I'll talk to you guys next time on Hey Listen.
Thank you, Brian. So I'll tell you what I don't want to see in Breath of the Wild sequel. Ilya, because she's the worst.
Well, I kind of do want to see Ilya in Breath of the Wild sequel, because that would be very...
No, you don't.
That would imply a whole lot of things about the timeline. There would be a whole lot going on in the Breath of the Wild sequel if it meant that Ilya was showing up, but...
If Ilya showed up, I would cry. I would be so angry. I would just cry.
I think there are some things from the original Breath of the Wild that don't make sense to be in the sequel, even if they were good in Breath of the Wild. The rusty weapons kind of thing, where weapons break after a few hits, was controversial. Some liked it, some didn't like it. I think it makes sense for a sort of, you know, you're waking up from a post-apocalypse, but you don't necessarily have to keep doing that. I would like to see maybe the weapon system kept. I do like the idea of the swords and the two-handed swords and the spears, just all these weapons that have different abilities, you know, so you're not just using your sword all the time like in previous Zelda games, but not necessarily weapons that just break all the time.
Next, we have community news with Realm and Anne.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the community news. I am the Zelda Anne.
And I'm Realm. As usual, there's a lot to tell you, so let's get started.
First of all, thank you to everyone who logged on to Zelda Universe TV on Twitch earlier this month for ZU-a-thon, Zelda for Eternity 2019. This year, we raised a record sum of $3,233.69, all of which will go to support St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. That's amazing! Keep your eyes and ears peeled for announcements about the next ZU-a-thon.
Over on the ZU forums, the first ever ZU Olympics competition has wrapped up. A whopping total of 40 ZUers signed up to participate in this three-team showdown, which lasted throughout July. As of reporting, Lone Judge Solicitor is in the process of, well, judging. The results will be available in the Olympic Stadium board as soon as they are finalized. Thanks to everyone who participated and made the first ZU Olympics a huge success.
The Summer Awards for 2019 have officially begun. The staff heard your cries of agony during the Winter Awards, and the voting phase is now safely back in the hands of the community. A first for the Community Awards this time is the ability to opt out of participating in these awards season, which is great for those who are too humble to accept an award publicly. As of reporting, nominations are underway and will last through Sunday, August 18th. Voting will start on the day and last a week, and the results will be up. The first week of September awards season is always a blast, so get out there and show your fellow ZUers how much they mean to you.
Please nominate me for the best community news reporter.
I don't think there's an award for that realm.
Well, there should be. Anyway, you may have noticed the new clan and staff banners around the forums, as well as a new color scheme for the various user groups. You're not losing your mind, or at the very least, this isn't a symptom of it. Zelda Universe's design guru, Caleb, put together the new banners, while ZU's DevOps manager, Matthew, aka AndroidOS, implemented them in the new username colors. The banners look great, so thanks, guys.
The forum staff has seen a couple of new additions recently. First, Falsy has joined the ranks of the Zelda section moderators. And last but not least, Zora Luigi has joined Winnie and Solciter as mod of the Din clan. We've already seen great things from Falsy and Zora Luigi, and we look forward to everything they have to offer their respective sections in the future.
Over in the Zelda section, the Breath of the Wild sequel discussion thread in Breath of the Wild sequel and future Zelda has surpassed 1,000 posts. If you're one of the three people on ZU who has yet to pitch in your thoughts on the upcoming game, it's never too late to join the discussion.
In community news coming out of Community Central, TrueEdge67 has started a community poll of the week to accompany our ongoing community question of the week. It's a similar concept to the latter, asking a new question of the community each week, but it's more of a multiple choice thing than an open-ended thing. Previous polls of the week include tacos or burritos, and the extremely controversial cats or dogs. Yikes!
Speaking of Community Central, the second annual ZU Scavenger Hunt, subtitled The Repicturing, for some reason, is underway as of August 18th. Big Daddy Biggles is running things this time, so don't be surprised if beards show up on the list of photo subjects to capture. The event will last for 5 weeks, with a new list of subjects presented each week, so grab your camera and or phone and get out there. To keep up with the action, check out the thread in Community Central.
Speaking of Big Daddy Biggles, over in General Chit Chat, there is a new thread started by him that asks you to admit to things you have never done that other people think you should have done. So if you've never seen Star Wars or tried sushi before, you'll probably feel right at home in that discussion.
We interrupt this community news segment to welcome back ZU veterans Ian and LP Soldier. Ian has returned after 3 years of absence, while LP Soldier has returned for the first time since 2011. On ZU, we have a saying, they always come back. Anyway, back to your regularly scheduled community news segment.
That was still news. I'm so confused. Anyway, two contrasting threads have popped up in general gaming recently. The first one, started by our resident turtle, Jay Pineapple, is about the worst video game you've ever played. This controversial thread has naturally exploded through, luckily only figuratively, for now, I assume. On the other hand, to complement all that negativity, the recently returned Ayan has started a new thread where you can list your top 10 favorite video games ever. It is of absolutely no surprise, given the name of our website, that at least one Legend of Zelda title appears on almost every top 10 list posted so far.
Let's jump over to the creative side of ZU. First, July's Creator of the Month was Let's Player Greenzy, while August's is visual artist The Twilight Princess. You should definitely check out their respective works because they're great. Congratulations on earning such a distinction, you two, and we look forward with bated breath to see your future creations.
Staying in the creative corner for another minute, a couple of writing contests have concluded since the last ZUcast episode. First of all, Link of Time 200, now known as If It's Not Fun, won his second contest in a row in June. The prompt was, The Day the World Ended, and he won with his post-apocalyptic tale, Scavengers. June's runner-up was Miss Dreamcast, who submitted a pre-apocalyptic tale, 2054. July's writing contest, in which the prompt was early morning on a day off, had two winners, contest veteran C.L. Bell with the thrill short story Spirit, and first-time entrant Boxes with a surreal story entitled They All Blend Together. Miss Dreamcast once again achieved a runner-up with their twisty horror fanfic, The Worker's Nightmare. The August writing contest is currently live. The prompt is The Best Storm of the Year, and entries are due by 11:59 p.m. Pacific Time on August 23rd.
In the Roleplay Guild section, GamerKitty205 is recruiting for a Tales of Worlds roleplay called ZU City into Roleplay Forest. This extremely meta RP casts participants as fictionalized versions of themselves as they investigate who or what is keeping Roleplay Forest so sparse of roleplays, and, as a result, so wild and dangerous to enter. Frankly, this hurts my head with how meta it is, but it also sounds like a whole lot of fun.
I think I'll need a few minutes to wrap my head around that scenario, but not right now, because we've come to the community news finale.
Yes, if you're a longtime community news listener, you've probably noticed that we haven't mentioned the ZUer of the month yet.
The fact is, we've been saving it for the last, so we could keep you here as our prisoner until we've covered that.
Okay, I wasn't exactly thinking of it in those terms, but I suppose the result is the same.
To start off, July's ZUer of the month was active, Ferrorian, General Chit Chatter, and Form Gamer, Tingle Makes Me Tingle, who should definitely be nominated for the most unsettling username in the Summer Awards.
Not a thing.
Well, it should be. Anyway, here's what Tingle Makes Me Tingle's fellow Form Games regular Teed had to say to him. You are always nice to everyone and are quick to be helpful. I very much enjoy the fun times that we have in Form Games. It is always nice to see you there. I know that many people here look forward to having you around. I hope that we all enjoy having you here as part of the community for many years to come. Congratulations, Tingle. Yes, the Form Games subcommunity can't exist without its regulars, and Tingle Makes Me Tingle has firmly established himself as a fun participant in all of the shenanigans. Can I stop saying his username now?
Yes, you can. August ZUer of the month is ZU's favorite typo turtle himself, Jay Pineapple. As a longtime ZUer of over 6 years, and even a former staff member, JP received an outpouring of love from the community this month. Fellow ZU veteran and former staffer Vinra had this heartfelt praise for the turtle. JP is more than just a goofball. Beneath his turtly shell, he has such a big heart. He really cares about this community and the people in it. He is generous with his time and selfless in his support of his friends. He has been through a lot, but he hasn't let any of that keep him down. He's resilient AF. He's funny and open and honest. Whenever I'm feeling glum or need someone to hear me out, he is always there to help with reassurance and empathy and humor to get me through. I know a lot of people love him for his antics, but he's so much more than that. JP is a treasure, and we should all be thankful he spends time here with us. I'm so thankful I can count him among my friends. Congratulations, JP. You've more than earned it. There isn't really anything else to say, because Vinra pretty much echoes what we all think of JP.
Congratulations to Tingle Makes Me Tingle and Jay Pineapple. We hope you enjoyed or continued to enjoy your months.
And with that, we're done here. Before we go, I want to plug my own thing.
Wait, what?
I'm going to be putting together a new segment for the ZU cast that's all about Zelda theorizing, and would like some behind-the-scenes consultation from some experienced theorists. So if you are interested in lending me a hand, please PM me on the forums. My username is Realmwings, no space.
That wasn't community news.
Nah.
Anyway, if you have any scraps of actual news that you want to announce on here, whether it's related to something happening online or to something happening offline, please feel free to send a PM to either Realmwings or Ezlo Spirit.
Yep, this is Realmwings.
And the Zelda Anne.
Thanks for listening to the community news. Catch you next time. And, oh, Zelda theorists, you know what you have to do.
Realm, you can't just plug on your own content without telling me ahead of time. That's just totally not okay.
Meh.
So Cody and I both took part in ZUthon. Cody played remotely, and I did it here in person because it was at my house. So that was a lot of fun. We raised a lot of money for charity, more than we've ever brought in for charity. Was it exhausting? Absolutely, but it was also worth it. I feel like I can go a few hours without sleep if these kids are going through chemo. Honestly, my favorite was just having everybody over. Just the community building is what I love so much about ZUthon. Just getting to see everybody and then also getting to interact with everybody else in the Zelda community. Because we got to talk to like the Zelda Dungeon people. So many other like popular YouTubers were helping promote it and also playing remotely. Cody, tell me what it was like doing it from down under while we were all asleep here in America.
Yeah, no, it's a good time. So what happens with my part of the ZUthon? I'm a part of the ZUthon every year, except I've never been to the actual event. Instead, what I do is, at like 3 a.m. American time, when they all want to go to sleep, I just start my, 6 to 8 hour show because, well, it's like 1 p.m. over here, so easy enough for me. So every year I do the Cody Zone, in which I play Oracle of Seasons, Oracle of Ages. I'm thinking of branching out into some other video games that have a shovel, and I just don't make much progress, and instead I do something. We actually completed what we call a shovel percent run, and by we I mean I made that up. A shovel percent run of Oracle of Seasons is when you hit the maximum of 999 rupees, and then you also hit the maximum of 999 chunks of ore from Subrosia, which is something that you can only do if you just sit there digging holes. So it was a great time with me. Marcy's, the owner of Zelda Dungeon, came along for part of it. Mariland from the Pokemon website Mariland was along. It's always a fun time in the Cody Zone. And we raised a fair amount of money just on the premise that I would make some progress and stop digging if they donated money. So for small chunks at a time, I actually did make progress. So we ended up completing a couple of dungeons during the run, thanks to the donations of people who were sick of me.
I remember us watching it from here, and there were times where we were just like falling off the couch just about it, going, Cody, please, please, Cody.
That's the fun part. So did you, on the couch, were there many people who hadn't experienced the Cody Zone before?
There were, I feel like, a few people who had not experienced the Cody Zone, at least not the Cody Zone in person like this before, because Josh Lindquist was there, Jake was there, Jacob, as in Clubbing Baby Seals, was there. But yeah, there were definitely a few people who had not experienced the Cody Zone in all its glory.
Well, that's good. I hope they enjoyed the Nintendo 64, which is my favorite part. Which is when I just play the clip from the Nintendo 64 video where a child receives a Nintendo 64 for Christmas.
That was the part that had us screaming on the couch going, please stop anything but that. Oh yeah, and Andrew was there. He knew about the Cody Zone but had not experienced it like that in its entirety. But he was definitely familiar with the Cody Zone.
As you can tell, the Cody Zone is a life-altering experience. You will remember it once you see it, so
whether you like it or not.
Whether you like it or not. So be sure to follow us on twitch.tv/ZeldaUniverseTV if you want to see our Twitch channel and all of the exciting shows. It's not just me. Amanda does a show there called Running Blind with Amanda, where she puts on a blindfold and she runs around the shopping malls of America.
Yes, that is exactly what I do. I run through the American shopping malls blindfolded.
It's a fun time, whichever show you go to visit over on that Twitch channel.
Yeah, sometimes I end up buying weird things.
And sometimes along the way, we raise $3,300 for charity, so that's good too.
So here's Hebron with Tingles Jingles Water Themes.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Tingle Jingles in the Zelda Universe podcast. I'm Hiran Jacobo, and today we will dive deep into some world themes from the Zelda series to help us get our minds off the heat waves on this hot, hot summer, at least in this part of the world. World themes within the franchise have always been characterized for being relaxing and peaceful, and often evoking memories of the sea breeze at a beach or the flow of a river. So first, we'll be taking a look at Lake Hylia's theme. And while this has been a recurring location in many games, this time we'll focus on Twilight Princess's Lake Hylia. This theme is a pure definition of a water theme, and while it's a very short loop in itself, it only needs two main instruments to evoke a charming feeling of peace: a strings arpeggio for the bass, and a classical guitar for the melody. These alone and a slow-paced tempo create the perfect ambience for what being in a lake feels like. Moving on to another recurring location, we have Sora's Domain from Ocarina of Time. This time, the music is fuller and richer, and a bit more lively than the previous one. But the choice of instruments creates that aquatic atmosphere that we know so well. Once again, a classical guitar leads the melody, while I especially like the steel drums that evoke a tropical feeling. Moving into dungeon territory, most of the themes have a more mysterious tone that doesn't inspire peace as other water themes, like the Water Temple from Ocarina of Time, or the Great Bay Temple from Majora's Mask. But there is one in particular that is peaceful in its very own way. This is the Ancient Cistern from Skyward Sword. This theme has a peculiar eastern vibe that reminds of Zen and tranquility, very much in the style of meditation music, which goes very well with the architecture of the dungeon. And while it is not exactly a dungeon, or even a water theme for that matter, the Ice Cavern from Ocarina of Time is another good way to help us forget the summer heat. Another short loop of only a couple instruments, it combines drums of high-pitched bells, which remind of winter and chill vibes, with the background sound of a cool wind blowing. And I know it is not water, but it is refreshing nonetheless. But if water is what you're looking for, look no further than the Great Sea from The Wind Waker. The whole game is water all around the place, but the most you'll see is in the overworld. While the sound of waves and seagulls are consistent in the background, more than peace, the Great Sea's theme evokes adventure, exploration, discovery, a more upbeat theme and with a different choice of instruments than the others. This theme is bold and adventurous, the same way one would feel when sailing into the vast unknown ocean in search of new thrills. And now we'll wrap this list up on a very different note. Attack on Baruta from Breath of the Wild is one of my favorite themes in the series, and it is inspired by water in another of its forms. Rain is strong and unpredictable, and a fast-paced, dramatic theme is a perfect accompaniment for a battle with a colossus under a heavy rain. The rushing piano and tense strings provide the perfect background for a battle, while the melody, slow and impatient, drives the tension of the music up and down. The thing can be both peaceful and raging, just as the pouring rain. And with that concludes my list of war themes from the Zelda series, which, as we have seen, just like water, have many forms and states. It can be calm, relaxing, cleansing, or it can be fierce and destructive. What are your favorite water themes from the series? Let me know in my Twitter at scom612. That is SKOM612. I am Hiran Jacobo, and I thank you for listening. And I'll be back with you in a future episode.
So Cody, what water themes do you like in Zelda games?
I'm not usually a big fan of any kind of water level.
But the music is always good. Like, even if the level is terrible, the music can usually be, like, awesome.
Yeah. I mean, Majora's Mask, I liked that one. But I do associate the water stuff in Majora's Mask with having an actual sort of fun water mechanic, which is the Zora, where you can zoom around fast and do dives out of the water and all that kind of thing. So that brings good associations to me with the water levels.
That's a good point. And plus, you know, they have the whole, the Indiegogos. That's right, the Indiegogos over it.
Yeah, they have the band.
Yeah, and that's water. I love the music in Wind Waker. And I mean, that's just a water game.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that does make sense. In that case, my favorite water theme...
All of the music in Wind Waker is my favorite.
Is the soundtrack to the Wind Waker.
Yeah, mine too. I count the whole thing because it counts.
So next up, we have Hyrule Away from Hyrule. Zelda in Super Smash Bros.
Smash Bros. Was a series based solely on cramming as much fan service into a unique style of versus game as physically possible. For my money, I'd probably still be insanely enamored with the game if it had just stuck to some kind of like original cast instead of being a Nintendo IP machine, but there's no denying that cramming the game with all the other games that I love helps. As this is Zelda Universe, I wanted to talk today about how The Legend of Zelda is represented in the Smash Bros. Games. We'll talk about what's there, what's missing, and what else we'd love to see in the future. Welcome to Hyrule Away from Hyrule. I'm your host, Randy. For each one of these, I like to take a look at what Zelda is when removed from its core games. This time, we're going to look at how Nintendo chooses to represent itself, more or less, when displaying The Legend of Zelda in the Nintendo Smash Bros. Series. You can't talk about the well-regarded fighting game, now in its fifth iteration, without talking about the fighters. One of the interesting things about the Zelda roster in Smash Bros. Is that it's the only franchise that has multiples of the same quote-unquote character, like in Dragon Ball Z Fighters with Goku, Super Saiyan of every number Goku, Alphabet Soup God level Goku, and Kid Goku. There's a lot of links in this game. The difference, as anybody listening to a Zelda-based podcast should know, is that each Link is technically a different person altogether. Even if they share a fashion sense through time, to someone on the outside, Kid Link and Toon Link are fairly similar and probably look a little silly next to each other. Adult Link, who himself is technically a completely different Link between every Smash Bros., has evolved with the main console versions of Link. So, starting with Adult Link from 64, he became Twilight Princess Link, somewhere between Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword Link, and now he's rocking the Champion of the Wilds Link look. In more recent Smash incarnations, he's branched out to include more than just Goron tunics and Zora tunics and Dark Link colors, but now includes full-on costumes to mimic his casual clothes in Skyward Sword or the Fierce Deity Link. In Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Adult Link is easily the most versatile in terms of representation of other Links. But Toon Link and Kid Link are still around, bringing their respective flavor from The Legend of Zelda to Smash. Toon Link rocks that cel-shaded look that we saw in Wind Waker and the DS games, albeit in a way that kind of blends a little more closer to the sort of general Smash Bros. Art style rather than that full cel-shaded look. He's more animated and humorous, whereas Young Link seems to recall that one time he grew up, saved the broken world from a demon king before being turned back into a child, so, you know, a little less cheery. Together, the Links bring their arsenal of Zelda weapons and items to represent the core of their franchise, but they're not alone. Zelda and Sheik were an interesting addition to Melee. At the time, neither character had ever been playable, nor had they a lot of screen time really to draw action upon. For the most part, their movesets are entirely original. Zelda does call upon the three goddess crystals from Ocarina of Time, but their functions are still kinda wholly unique to Smash Bros. It's been interesting to watch these two halves evolve over time, eventually splitting into full characters each. They went from their Nintendo 64 outfits to Twilight Princess, of which Sheik was kind of like a proto-design, never actually put into a game, but was kind of like early on written to be put into Twilight Princess. And currently they've split between the timelines completely. Our brilliant Princess Zelda has adopted a Link to the Past, Link Between Worlds design that shines brighter than most characters in Smash Ultimate. Combined with one of her moves becoming the Phantom Armor from Spirit Tracks, that Zelda's really just kind of in the best of every Zelda. She feels truly like every princess rolled into one, and honestly, it's just amazing. Sheik did something similar, adopting the look of a Sheikah armor from Breath of the Wild in the most recent Smash. Technically, Sheik only appeared in one game, two if we count the other fanservice mashup Hyrule Warriors. But the look has changed to feel modern with each iteration. And of course, we have Ganondorf, who was a bit of a strange entry into Smash Brothers. Originally, he was just a heavy-duty clone of Captain Falcon. Instead of fire, everything's dark wizard magic punches, because you know how wizards punch. While still having unmistakably Falcon-based moves, his properties and normal moves started to evolve over time, kind of taking their own direction. By the time he came back to his King of Themes garb in Ultimate, he could barely be recognized as a Falcon clone, really. Especially as he now, after 18 years, finally uses the sword to fight. And what is easily one of the best move changes I've ever seen in Smash Brothers. Ganon went from one of my least played to one of my most played real fast. It is unfortunate, though, that his Lu Bu-inspired Hyrule Warriors look didn't come in as an alternate costume. Speaking of costumes, when the Mii Fighters were added to the fourth generation of Smash, they were given an abundance of costumes from various characters throughout Nintendo history to wear. You can dress your Mii up in either Classic Adult or Champion Adult Link. There's also a Sinister Skull Kid costume you can put on. You can don a Zelda wig, a Sheik hood, Majora's Mask just sort of by itself, or even a full Yiga costume. While it all seems silly to have costumes that are just kind of main fighters like Link, they really are some of the best costumes in that for Mii Fighters. Here's hoping one day we'll see a Blue Ganon costume of some sort. With Smash Brothers games, it's not just who is in Smash Brothers, but where. Stages are like characters in and of themselves, bringing a lot of potential flavor and service from their original titles. In the original Smash 64, Hyrule Castle was one of the only accurately represented stages pulled directly from the game. You never actually see Saffron City's skyline or fight on a giant island tower in Mario 64, but you can take a look at Hyrule Castle's rooftop in Ocarina of Time and you'll see the stage was basically just carried directly over. A few level design enhancements were made, but by and by it's the same roof that's in the Ocarina of Time game. So all of that went right out the window when Temple came to Smash Bros. Melee. The stage doesn't look like anything specifically from Zelda 2, The Adventures of Link. Great Bay is much more identifiable as it is lifted, similarly to the castle, directly out of Majora's Mask. Crazy specific details have been shown in that level, including a heart piece located well out of camera range in a place where, if you were playing Majora's Mask, there'd be a heart piece there for you to collect. The Bridge of Elden was also directly lifted from Twilight Princess, complete with the mechanic of a large portion being missing and then being restored by Midna's magic during the fight. With its brilliant Twilight atmosphere and stunning soundtrack, it's been an amazing Zelda stage since it entered in Brawl. The pirate ship is more based on the ship of the Wind Waker than actually being representative of a ship in Wind Waker. It doesn't go through quite the same great ocean you would expect in any particular order. You would want to see things like Windfall and Dragon Roost Island in the background, but at least in Smash Ultimate, those islands are kind of gussied up a little more frequent, so at least the level looks better. In the 3DS and Wii U versions of Smash Bros., we were introduced to a host of new stages from Ocarina of Time, Spirit Tracks, and Skyward Swords. We went back to visit the Gerudo Valley, bisected, to form a surprisingly brilliant and recognizable stage. The twin Rovo witches come in and make some trouble for you, which feels super authentic, even though you don't see them out in the wild, they're only in dungeons. All aboard the Spirit Train, while it doesn't go to any specific locations that you recognize, similar to Pirate Ship, it nevertheless accurately pulls up the feeling of riding in on a crazy train, especially with the overworld theme blasting out as you drive along. And it was impressive how accurate Skyloft was. Another tourism stage, as it's called, you travel along the massive island flying from different points, and everything is just immediately an identifiable landmark. It's easily the best way to handle a stage like that, and honestly it was pulled off pretty flawlessly. You'd really have to yank both models out and sit there and stare at them to find the actual differences, of which I'm sure there are many, but when you're in the moment playing the game, it really just feels like, hey, I'm on Skyloft now. Like, this is just the Skyloft that I've spent too much time on in Skyward Sword. And in Smash Ultimate, we only got a handful of brand new stages altogether, but one of them was from Breath of the Wild. The Great Plateau's Sheikah Tower represented in all its incredibly tall glory. Narrow, dangerous, and with a spectacular view, it's exactly what you would want from such a stage. It's only a little bit of a shame that you don't see things like guardians roaming around the background. And, you know, thinking about it, Divine Beast Von Meadow would have been a pretty cool stage all on its own. A number of visitors have come from various incarnations to Hyrule to take part in the Smash Bros. Games as assist trophies. These non-playable, summonable fighters include Tingle, Girahim, Midna, Skull Kid, and The Moon. While it still seems perplexing that Skull Kid doesn't just summon the moon, it is no less a joy to see them both in the same game. For a series that is heavily based on the accrual of items and power-ups, it's kind of a surprise how few had made it into Smash Bros. From The Legend of Zelda. The Heart Container is the only series regular, fully healing whomever is swift enough to grab it, but in Melee we only saw the addition of the Bunny Hood, and in Brawl we only got a Deku Nut. It wasn't until the fourth Smash outing that we finally got a bigger influx of items. The Fairy Bottle, the Gust Bellows, the Bomb Chew, the Kukos, and, my personal favorite, the Beetle. It feels like with Smash 4 they corrected the number, but it still just feels like there should be more items from the Legend of Zelda series. Again, a series famous for its sheer plethora of random junk that has uses. One of Smash's most underappreciated aspects is the sheer quantity and quality of music pulled from every which franchises and included on these stages. The Legend of Zelda is a series well-renowned for its music, and because of that, the selection almost feels a little lacking in some key areas. First of all, the overworld theme, as you may know it, or you may know it by its technical name, the Hero's Theme, appears 8 times through Smash, not counting the pseudo, kind of, still similar Tall Tall Heights. This rivals Mario's 1-1 theme in terms of, shall we say, reuse. But even that classic track seems to have a bit more variations in its remixes. Surely we did not need the only song from Majora's Mask to be Termina Field, which is just the Hero's Theme. And then they remixed it. And that same theme is the main stage music for Termina Bay. Why not a brilliant rendition of Clock Town, Skull Kid's theme, Majora's Wrath? The lack of a proper Majora's Mask song has been one of the series' greatest crimes, right up there with not including the ARMS theme. Most of the music is lifted directly from where it came from, maybe given a fairly samey upgrade. The Dark World themes, various Hyrule Field themes, Wind Waker mainstays all show up. They're good, but none of them are particularly stellar remixes. Many tend to be steps back from the original, like the Great Sea or Mulgara's theme. The Great Temple from Link's Adventure is still a strong standout. In fact, it was so good, they just made it a second time with barely any iteration at all. But that's not meant to slam on the overall selection of music. There's an incredible original arrangement of Ocarina themes from 64, and Full Steam Ahead gets an upgrade to prove that, once and for all, it is the best Zelda overworld theme. With the addition of Breath of the Wild, we got a few standard selections, but the standout hit for me was Cass's theme, given a wild and energetic new arrangement. Still, after all this time, it seems like yet another in a long list of crimes that the Ballad of the Windfish isn't on here. Quick check of hands. How many versions of You Are the Ocean's Great Wave do we have? And it's kind of the same song? Anyway, we've seen a lot of Zelda cameos through the various modes of Smash Brothers, namely Adventure Mode and Smash Run. There you can see some common fun enemies like the Octoroks, the P-Hats, your Stavos, your Bubbles, your Darknuts, and your Rededs. Even Ocarina of Time Ganon makes an appearance as a boss in Smash Ultimate. It should be noted that Smash Bros. Isn't the only fighting game Link's been in. Back in 2003, Link joined the cast of the GameCube version of Soul Calibur 2. Each console had their own guest, but it would be hard to argue that Link wasn't a fan favorite by a mile. While he was more grounded by the nature of Soul Calibur's style of fight, it was easy to see that Link was very well translated from the Legend of Zelda franchises. He retained a lot of his trusty items, including his bow, and he wielded various versions of weapons from throughout the series. The Master Sword and Hylian's Shield had alternate appearances, like the Razor Sword, the Megaton Hammer, and the Cane of Birna. And his joke weapon, a regular staple for each character in the series, was his trusty bug-catching net. It's kind of curious if we'll ever see any more from Legend of Zelda in fighting games. Whatever Smash is next will very likely have Link action, but with the recent Cadence of Hyrule game, it would be interesting to see who else can get Nintendo to let them use our favorite cast for a game. Maybe next time we'll see dehydrated Ganondorf and all his bronzed muscular glory. Next time on Hyrule Away from Hyrule, we're going to talk about something that isn't dehydrated Ganondorf. Or maybe we'll talk about that fan art as an excuse to talk about him more. Find out next time on Hyrule Away from Hyrule.
You know, I've never been good at playing as Zelda in Smash Brothers, but the new version in Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, that Zelda I'm actually pretty decent with.
Look, Zelda in Super Smash Brothers is dangerous because she has this teleport, which is very useful when used properly, but also a lot of the time it just results in you dying at 0% because you ended up warping yourself far off the edge of the stage. So
that's what I would end up doing, and I would get angry and rage.
But yeah, Zelda is Zelda's probably in my top 15 Smash Brothers characters. I will pick her occasionally. But Zelda characters in Smash Brothers, I like many of the Links, whether it's a Big Link, Small Link, Young Link, Toon Link. I don't think Small Link is a character that's been in Super Smash Brothers, but you never know. Maybe he'll be DLC.
Would Small Link be like Minish Link? Because that would technically be Small Link.
Yeah, that could be Minish Link, or it could be just the sprite version of like the original Legend of Zelda Link, the little sort of gnome creature
that's
in the actual art for what theoretically Link was supposed to look like in the old game.
You know who I want in Super Smash Brothers?
Who?
I want Ilya in Super Smash Brothers so I can beat her up.
Maybe as a, like an assist trophy or
something. She can... I don't really care. No, I don't want her as an assist trophy because she's useless. Like, she's not helpful. I don't want her and assist in the same sentence. I just want to beat her up. The end.
Look, there are some useless assist trophies out there. There's Pokeballs like Goldeen.
Fair.
Which just splash around doing nothing.
But at least Goldeen is likable. Ilya is not.
I mean, if Ilya had one power in Super Smash Bros., I guess it would be something to do with brushing horses or something. I don't know what other skills she could bring.
Her power would just be making me angry.
That's a good one. Yeah, makes Amanda angry.
Her power would be stealing guys you're interested in. That would be her power.
That would be an interesting Smash Brothers power, yeah.
I don't like Ilya.
I know. I've heard this many times, in fact.
Can you believe Elias wrote his Why Ilya is the Best article? He worked on that at my house while he was sitting on my couch. My couch that I take naps on.
It's tainted now. You're going to have to throw it out.
It is tainted with Ilya thoughts.
So, for those of you who don't know the joke here, Amanda wrote an article last year or so.
It was last year, yeah.
Yeah, explaining why she doesn't like Ilya. Not anything to do with the game, but because Ilya reminds her of a girl that she didn't like.
A girl that I actually never met. Okay, I'm incredibly petty sometimes with some things, and this is one of them. And yes, it is a grudge I will hold on to forever, and I'm okay with that. The article was supposed to be petty. Like, it's supposed to be like, oh my gosh, this is incredibly petty, but you know what? She went with it. And also kind of like a relatable, because everybody has that one thing that they will just never get over. And this for me was one of them, because the girl, I never even met her. I still think the guy was making her up, because he would always talk about like this girl that I never saw, and he wrote her stupid name on this stupid rubber band and would wear it around his like wrist, like a bracelet, and put like those two together, and I'm going, oh my gosh. And then like everything he would say about her reminded me was like exactly like Ilya. Even like the whole memory loss thing of, he was like, oh yeah, she lost her memory and I was the only thing she could remember. I'm like, bull crap, none of this is real. You are making this girl up. And so Elias enjoys giving me crap about it. And he is convinced that Ilya is the best, but I think he only likes Ilya because I don't like Ilya.
We have some strange people out there on our staff that they like. I mean, I don't know, liking Twilight Princess in the first place, I feel like, is a warning sign, but...
I love Twilight Princess! Like, the only bad thing about Twilight Princess is Ilya.
That's one way to look at it.
It has kitty cats!
It does have kitty cats who are very fussy and make and force you to go into fishing minigames, but...
But they're cute, and I like fishing minigames.
Well, we'll have to... agree to disagree.
I feel like you just wrote strike two next to my name.
No.
You totally did. You just totally just wrote strike two next to Amanda.
Well, we'll have to find out. So what's up next, Amanda?
Up next is feedback. So this is feedback that you guys have sent us. So this feedback is through email. It says, hey there, guys. My name is Brian, longtime listener. I used to listen to the podcast years with lots of S's, ago when Maddox and the old crew were hosts, and still listening to the new podcast. Keep up the great work, guys. I have a would you rather question to ask the crew. Would you rather A, own a hookshot and be able to turn into a Zora, B, own a Megaton hammer and be able to turn into a Goron, or C, own the bunny hood and be able to turn into a Deku Scrub?
All right, well, before we cover the question, I will say, hello, Brian. I am one of the old hosts of the old podcast, so I'm sure you're happy to hear from me. The old podcast that ran from about 2009 to about 2012, then went on a long break and then reappeared. So, yes, I am here. Hello, Brian. So, what do you think, Amanda, out of these three options, which one would you prefer?
Oh, that's easy. Own a hookshot and be able to turn into a Zora. I love swimming. Like, swimming is one of my favorite things to do. I currently have water in my ear because I went swimming yesterday and I was, like, in the pool for, I don't know, probably 3 hours. And, yeah, now I've got swimmer's ear going on, but it was totally worth it. So, yeah, hookshot and be able to turn into a Zora. That would be amazing. Then, also, the great thing about having a hookshot and being able to turn into a Zora, that means you could swim out, like, really far out into the ocean. And then, if you don't want to, like, have to deal with swimming all the way back to shore, you just use the hookshot and, like, hook onto something, and that'll get you closer to shore.
I do think the hookshot and Zora one is pretty tempting. Speaking about Earth in particular, we are made up of a majority water, so...
A majority of water. You get it? You get it?
I do get it. Ha ha ha! So, a Goron would also be fun in the sense that I like the land travel that the Goron provides. I love rolling real fast and growing spikes and bouncing off of walls. That sounds like a good time. Bunny Hood and Deku Scrub. I think Bunny Hood... The Bunny Hood is a good item. Just being able to run, just in general, just like faster. And the Deku Scrub, I don't know about the advantages of a Deku Scrub, really. It really depends on
Like, are you the business scrub, or are you just one of the ones that just shoots rocks at people?
If you're able to dive into flowers and then burst out into the air, it might actually be pretty helpful to be a Deku scrub. I guess it really depends on...
It would also be kind of cute.
But yeah, no, I'd have to agree that overall, the hookshot is just phenomenally useful. And I was talking earlier about how being a Zoro was a lot of fun in Majora's Mask, being able to sort of dolphin dive out of the water and all of that kind of thing. So yeah, we agree on A, own a hookshot and be able to turn into a Zoro. That's our preference here at the Zelda Universe Marathon.
Aw, Cody, we agree on something.
Yes. And the Zelda Universe podcast.
Yes.
So if you have feedback you would like us to read and respond to, you can send it to podcast@zeldauniverse.net. And we will have a look at it, and we will probably read it out on the air. So please do that. It's always good to hear some feedback from people.
Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening to episode 8 of the ZU Cast. We had a lot of fun, as always. Cody, it is always a pleasure getting to work with you.
Yes, it is a fun time here in the Cody Zone.
He is correct.
And the Amanda Running Blind Zone.
Yep. Hey, Cody, if we had a crossover, then it would be Running Blind into the Cody Zone. And then we would do, like, a crossover stream. Oh my gosh, that would be so much fun. We should do that sometime.
Yeah.
We haven't commentated together in, like, I don't know how long.
Yeah, no, it's been a while. I haven't had a Twitch show in a while.
Yeah, we need to commentate together again. Like, where one of us plays and the other one, like, talks with you or with me or whichever.
Sounds like fun. I am happy to be on an episode of Running Blind with Amanda Van Hyl.
I would love for the Cody Zone to join Running Blind with Amanda Van Hyl. So again, thank you for listening. We will see you guys next time. My name is Amanda Van Hyl. You can find me on our YouTube channel each Sunday with Zelda News. You can find me on the Twitch channel, Zelda Universe TV with Running Blind with Amanda Van Hyl. You can also find me on panels. A lot of times we do conventions, and I am often one of the panel hosts. Pretty much anything that involves me being on camera or my voice being on a podcast, that's pretty much where you'll find me.
Yes, my name is Cody. I do not do many YouTube or Twitch things at the moment, but if you want to find me, I am also doing a variety of things, panels and conventions. We have PAX Australia coming up, so if you're in Australia, keep in mind that we plan to have, it hasn't actually come through for approval yet, but crossing our fingers, we plan to have a Zelda panel there, as well as at every other PAX, so PAX East, West, South, if you're at any of those where we go along to all of those, so have a look out on your list if you're at one of those conventions to see what the panel schedule is. See if there might be a little Zelda panel in there. Otherwise, I will see you later.
Bye, guys.
Congratulations on surviving another episode of the ZU Cast. It is, of course, now time for the credits. Your hosts this month were Cody Davies and Amanda Van Hyl. Retro. Shona Johnson gave an overview of what she wants to see in the sequel to Breath of the Wild. By total coincidence, sort of not really, Brian Thomas provided a flip side to Shona's segment in this episode's Hey, Listen! The Zelda Anne and Realm Wings reported the community news. Fun fact, after recording this month's news, Anne actually hopped onto the forums. So if you have a forum account, go say hi on her wall. She'll probably actually see it now. Anyway, Hirana Kobo returned with a Tingles Jingles segment on water-related themes in the Zelda series. Finally, Randy Marr weaved some colors into a spire of flame in his Smash Bros. Edition of Hyrule Away from Hyrule. That's it for everyone you heard today, but a whole bunch of people make this podcast possible behind the scenes. I'm Eden Biskin, the executive producer/egalitarian autocrat. I think that's a thing. Cody Davies serves as the consulting producer when he's not busy digging holes in Oracle of Seasons. Kelly Timmerman is the head editor, not to be confused with the head editor, a creature that lurks in our studio basement who is known for disfiguring people's heads. We have three public relations assistants: Mary Stowe, who gets the word out on ZU's social media pages, Megan Negrelli, who gets the word out more broadly, and Pietro Bucci, who gets the word out on the ZU forums. Joshua Lindquist is our technical advisor, and Joshua and Realmwings create pretty graphics for us. Special thanks to Peyton Garrett, who put together our YouTube thumbnail for this release. Elias Thompson is that guy who keeps breaking into the ZUBC studio at night to use our toilet and leave unsolicited feedback on the whiteboard. The ZUcast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe. Feedback is potent fuel for the Master Cycle Zero that is the ZUcast. Unlike that famous Master Cycle Zero, we have multiple fuel hatches. Firstly, you can dump some feedback into our email inbox at podcast@zeldauniverse.net. If that's not convenient, you can drop some feedback into the official ZUcast 2019 hub thread on the ZU forums, specifically within Community Central. You can also insert feedback via ZU's Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Zelda Universe, or via YouTube or Twitch at Zelda Universe TV. We have some exciting content in the works for our next episode. I'll just leave you with a small hint to whet your appetite. Well, excuse me, princess! Gee, what could that possibly mean? Find out next time on the ZUcast. Until then, farewell.
Let's go on ahead and introduce our other host. Who do we have today?
Hello, it's me, Alex Rosenberg.
Alex Rosenberg? I didn't know you were joining me today.
Yes, I was just doing a play. I've been very busy.
Were you dancing on Broadway?
Yes, I'm always doing that. Yes.
As you should.
Oh, and Cody's here too.
This year we raised a record sum of $3,233. Okay. Little dyslexic there.
Who else had not experienced the Cody Zone firsthand?
I couldn't quite hear you. Could you please repeat what you said?
I just heard my phone my phone is talking to me. That's really weird. It just said, please repeat what you said. I'm like, shut up, phone.
This year, we raised a record sum of $3,233.69. U.S. dollars, all of which will be... Did I just say U.S. dollars again?
I think you said $3,233.69 U.S. dollars.
I'm going to edit that out.
Okay.
Or actually, no, I'll keep it, but I'll try not to say dollars, U.S. dollars.
Yes.
Here you go. Have some bloopers.
We always have some good more bloopers sleep. For this one.
Oh, yeah.
Zelda Universe's design guru, Caleb, put together the new banners. Nope.